Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for June the 10th, 2019. This is David Corey along with my co-host, Richard Hurley. Thank you for joining us this evening. We have two major segments in our show tonight. First, since June is Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder, that is PTSD Awareness Month, we have a series of interviews made by the VA about the experiences of veterans who are dealing with PTSD and related problems. And then in our second segment of the show tonight, we have news and information on various topics of interest to veterans, their friends, and families. So I hope you'll stay tuned. But first, let's go over to Richard Hurley. Hello, Richard. How are you tonight?
Hey there, David, and good evening to everybody out there. Yeah, tonight's a big show, and it's a big show for me because, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder, or as I like to now call it, just post-traumatic stress, is just, you deal with it all the time representing veterans. And I'm going to go into some personal stuff in a little bit about that. But this is a time that we all need to reflect upon the seriousness of PTS amongst our veterans, men and women. And there's so many variations from exposure to IEDs and combat, military sexual trauma, both men and women. I mean, it reaches a whole group of people out there who serve this country. And before we get into the details, I do want to remind our listeners that today that our show is a call-in show. And especially on a topic like this, PTS, you know, if you're listening, call in and talk about maybe your own experiences dealing with post-traumatic stress, or you know a friend or a family member. Everybody's touched by this particular issue. So please call in. And that number that you can call into is 1-888-627-6008. Again, that number is 1-888-627-6008. And throughout the show, David and I will give you that that number again. You know, one of the things, David, and, you know, when I interview new clients and clients who, veterans, that's what we're talking about, who maybe never filed a PTS claim before, and they're older, you know, they're in their, and David, you've done this, they're older, they're in their late 60s, 70s, a lot of them are Vietnam vets now, and this just happened 3 hours ago with a new client, and he's a Marine. Served in Vietnam. He's at the Tet Offensive. Raised the American flag at Wei. So we're sitting there talking. He's giving me the whole list of issues that he has, the physical issues. And then, you know, the next part for me is like dancing on eggs here, eggshells. Because, you know, I don't want to offend the veteran. But I say, well, okay, we've dealt with the physical. How about some mental issues? You know, do you have any, you know, anxiety, depression as a result of your service or as a result of these physical issues causing you anxiety and depression? And almost across the board, the veteran looks at me and says, I don't have any of that crap. I'm fine. Well, then I look over at his wife who's sitting in the other part of my office, and she's just shaking her head, no. And I look over and I say, well, sir, you know, I'm looking at your wife, and she has a whole different perspective on this than apparently you do. And he looks over at her, and he goes, what are you talking about? And then she starts. And she starts telling stories about how he can't sleep and the nightmares he has and the violent attacks that she's put up with. And on and on and on. And he goes, well, yeah, there's some stuff there. So then, like I did today, I said, okay, you were in Vietnam for 2 years. You're a Tet. tell me about that. Well, next thing you know, he starts telling this story. You know, you can't, you know, movies don't do this stuff justice. What I heard about everything that he dealt with from the time he got into Vietnam until the day he left, and the horrific nature of his service. The next thing you know, he's bawling in tears in my office. And then he looks at me and he said, like he did today, he looks at me and says, you know,
thanks.
I've never, ever, I haven't thought about that since I left Vietnam. And I, you know, and the wife looks at him and there's just a silence in this room. And I said, well, do you think you need some help? He says, you're damn right I need some help. This isn't an isolated incident, David. This happens routinely. And you see it and I see it. It's that. You know, when you hurt your back, when you hurt your leg, you break your back, you lose a leg, you lose an arm. You know, we can all see that stuff. Post-traumatic stress just sits between the ears. And the person who suffers from it, you know, just has to deal with that. And we don't do enough to help these men and women. We talk about it on this show, and we offer all sorts of different programs that are out there. And the VA talks about different suicide hotlines and all these other things. But the bottom line is we're still, you know, at the very basic core of trying to treat this and trying to save these veterans and future veterans.
Yeah.
So before we get into the tapes, Dave, I'm sure you've got something to say about it.
No, that's so true, everything you said, Richard. And, you know, the sad thing is this guy would have left Vietnam 50 years ago or pretty close to 50 years ago. Mm-hmm. So 50 years of suffering with it, and his wife, and if he had children, and all being affected by it, because we know it's just not something that affects just a person. But we have some interviews tonight. So Richard, if you want to bring us into this first one about an Army veteran, tell us about that.
Sure. In tonight's show, we have to make the connection here. The first tape we hear from the Army veteran named Dan, who served in Operation Desert Storm. He discusses his problems adjusting to civilian life and how he realized finally that he needed help to cope with his problems. Doug, please roll tape one.
My name's Dan. I served in the Army, United States Army. I was 13 Bravo Field Artillery. I served from 1987 to 1991. My whole tour was... I was stationed in Germany, just outside of Frankfurt. I took it very serious, and I really removed the civilian side of myself. I noticed that I wasn't relating to my friends and family. The whole reason I got out was to save my marriage. We weren't fighting. It's not like we weren't getting along, but I really did start loving the Army and the military more than my wife, especially after Desert Storm. That was like the icing. That's what took the last little bit of civilian, you know, the civilian Dan away. It was, that person was gone. Coming back to the world, just the shock of everybody has a different haircut now. Everybody talks different. Everybody dresses different. Nobody talks like me. Nobody acts like me. Nobody thinks like me. I short-circuited. You know, the severe nightmares, the severe social anxiety, not being able to be around crowds, couldn't go to stores, things like that. And over the years, that got worse and worse to the point where I wouldn't go anywhere without my wife, except maybe a couple, like a sporting goods store or something. When it was any place that had weapons, guns, I was comfortable. It was weird. So I became a recluse. I did drink, but I didn't do it all the time. You know, I would go out and drink, but what I would do is I would go out and go to a bar and try to find the biggest, nastiest person in there I possibly could, and I would do whatever I had to start a fight. And one night I was in an alley and I was fighting this guy, and a friend of mine came out to look for me and he found me and he stopped it. I realized every time during one of these fights, somebody had to stop me. And what if somebody isn't there to stop me sometime, and I actually, what if I kill somebody? I realized I needed help, and I went to the VA. I told my wife, I said, I need help. And it was hard. It was incredibly hard to admit that I needed help. I started seeing a psychiatrist, and the first one didn't work. You have to find the right one. And I did finally find a good counselor there. And then also the vet center. I started getting involved with the vet center. The VA referred me there. So between the two, I was able to start integrating myself back into society. And if I hadn't gone to the VA, I would not be sitting in this chair. When I was diagnosed with PTSD, I did get some relief, because now I have something to look at. I've been told why I act the way I act. Every Marine, soldier, airman, you give them a mission, they're going to succeed. And my mission was to live with PTSD. What I could relay to another veteran is, you know, we were there for each other on the field, and now we're here for each other in the world. We are the only ones that understand each other. If you have an issue, if you're at the end of that road and it doesn't look like there's any way out, go to the VA, because they have people there that understand, and they have people there that care, and they will do anything and everything they can to help you. We've sacrificed so much, sacrificing your life or your quality of life is not unacceptable. Don't give up on yourself. Go get the help you need.
Well, we'd like to thank Army veteran Dan, who served in Operation Desert Storm, for sharing his experiences and his advice about going to the VA, going to VA Vet Center. Reach out. Take that first step. That's what's important. What do you think, Rick?
Well, Dan, great stuff by him. He said a couple things here. He said, I knew I finally needed help. You know, I think one of the things that when we deal with veterans and PTSD, and especially if they've never filed a claim for it before, I immediately say, look, I'm not saying that you're crazy. Because that's what they do. They right away think, I have PTSD, therefore I'm crazy. No, you're not crazy. You have a disorder. You have if you want to call it an illness, it's an illness. It's like cancer. It's like a heart disease. It's like diabetes. It's something that needs to be treated. You're not crazy. But like Dan, you need to go find the help so you can get better for yourself. And then when you get better for yourself, you can get better for your family, you know, your wife, your children, and your extended family. So, you know, the other thing that I'd like to throw out there to veterans listening is, and I hear this all the time, I did not file a PTS claim because I did not want to lose my right to have a weapon, to have a gun, because I like to hunt. But David, you and I both know one doesn't necessarily have to do with the other. If it's found that you're incompetent, well, that's a different issue. But the straight-up PTS doesn't say that you're incompetent. So, you know, I want, if there's any veterans, and hopefully there's a lot of veterans listening, or if there's a family member listening and you know a veteran who fits that particular model right there, gotta call them up and say, hey, look, you know, if you're worried about that, you really need to go talk to a lawyer, because you might be worrying for the wrong reasons. You know, get the help you need, like Dan did. And Dan said something else that was very appropriate. You know, he went back a couple of times until he could find the psychologist that could help him, or counselor. You know, that's true whether you have PTS or not. That's true in family counseling. You know, that's true in child counseling. You know, that's true trying to find a lawyer or a doctor. You know, you keep going back until you find the person that is going to, you know, fit the kind of person you need to help you. So like Dan, you know, one, realize you need the help, And two, go find it. And if the first person that you meet doesn't succeed and doesn't do it for you, don't stop. Go back and, you know, talk to a buddy who maybe does have a counselor and say, well, who do you use? Because I need to go talk to somebody, and Jane Doe over here isn't helping me out. So anyway, that's what I have to say. And David, why don't you introduce the next video?
Thanks. We're going to hear next from an Army veteran named Darren, who is going to talk about his experiences as he moved from military to civilian life and what that meant. So, Doug, if you'll roll tape two, please.
When I got out and retired, it's a lot of apprehension because you're leaving a life that is so structured, it's so routine, and you know what kind of policies you have to follow, what kind of uniforms you have to wear, and a whole different speak. And so when you get out after 20 years of doing that, and you get into the society where, you know, they may not have the work ethic or the work values that you are accustomed to, it can be very frustrating. As well as being an armor officer, there's not many tanks out in the real world. So I was like, well, what the heck am I going to do? My skills are with, you know, armor tanks and that type of thing. So, you know, I wasn't really sure what I was going to do, especially moving back to Minnesota. And in the area that we live right now, it has very small military bases and anything like that. So it's not like I could really go to work at a fort something and, you know, go to work as a contractor. So I had a lot of apprehensions when I got out of what I was going to do, where I would fit in, what kind of job I would get. And what I found out is that the skills that you bring out of the military, you know, the leadership skills, that the organizational skills, the commitment, the work ethic, and all of that is highly valuable in civilian life. But you have to also realize that civilian life is not military life. And so when you come in there and try to just go gangbusters on something, it doesn't always fly. So that was kind of hard getting used to at first. But as long as you can incorporate that, you know, you'll be all right. I mean, I remember some days where, you know, my guys would be working 24, 36, 48 hours straight when we were out in the fields. And, you know, if a tank went down, they worked till they fixed it. If it was 30 below zero, they were out there working and doing it. If it was 120 degrees, I was stationed in Fort Irwin, California for 3 years. You know, those guys were still out there working on the tanks, doing what they had to do to get the job done. And when you get into the civilian life, you know, you're kind of punching a clock in a lot of areas. Now, there are some jobs, of course, where you have that work ethic and the timelines and the suspenses, and that you have to get them done and no matter what. But for the majority of the civilian life, you know, you come in at 8, you leave at 4:30, and most of the people are leaving. And I find that probably a lot of the military people are sitting there by themselves in their office finishing whatever needed to be done that day. So I did find that there was kind of sometimes in some professions a work ethic that it was punch the clock 9 to 5 and, you know, you were gone. So that kind of, you have to kind of ease into that. And to tell you the truth, the first couple years, I was a workaholic, and especially working in the Pentagon where you're working, you know, 12, 13 hours a day, 6, 7 days a week. To come back and only work 8 hours a day was different, to say the least. You know, when I was going home at 4:30, I'm like, geez, shouldn't I be working another 2 or 3 hours? So it takes some getting used to. So you can almost overextend yourself, I think, when you first get out and you have that commitment to the job that maybe not everybody else has.
Well, we'd like to thank Darren for sharing his thoughts on what it was like for him to transition from military to civilian life and those changes. Rick, why don't you introduce our next guest?
I will. And before we do that, whoever listened to Darren there, at the end of our show, we do a very important segment we introduced the coaching into care program. And that talk, right on point with what Darren is talking about, which is the adjustment from military life to civilian life and how hard it can be, not just for the veteran, but for the veteran's family. In the next tape, we hear from a Marine named Marcos, who served from 2002 to 2006. Marcos was deployed 3 times and lost his buddies to a bomb on his last deployment. Right before coming home, and because of his experience, he was frequently on edge, angry, and began to engage in dangerous behavior. After a motorcycle accident that made him stop and think, he reached out for the help he needed at the VA. Once again, he reached out to the VA for help. Doug, please roll tape number 3.
My name is Marcos. I was a Marine, and I was an infantryman while I was in. Served 3 tours in Iraq. The first deployment was during the invasion, and it was really just everything happened so fast, and just coming straight out of infantry school, being exposed to combat right off the bat was definitely a shock. But things were moving at such a fast pace, I really didn't have time to think about anything. I think after my third deployment, I lost 2 buddies of mine that were in my squad to a suicide bomber. It really made me question really the importance of life and how things can end really quickly. I had been talking to them 1 minute, and literally, you know, about 20 seconds later, they're gone. And I think a lot of what was on my mind was that, you know, we had plans when we got out. We were going to go to school together. We were going to, you know, maybe get an apartment together and just live life, you know, and in a shadow of instant, that's gone. You know, especially coming from an infantry background where you're out, you know, 24/7, patrols, whatever the case is, it was very difficult for me to comprehend that I could go outside of my house at, you know, 2, 3 in the morning without a weapon and be able to walk the streets and nothing was going on. I could hear a pin drop, and it was very unsettling. The peace was very unsettling. You know, just trying to get used to not having a schedule, not having someone to answer to, not having people under me that are looking for leadership or guidance or whatever the case. I think that was probably one of the biggest issues, just not having a direction. At the time, I really didn't know what PTSD was or any of these mental issues that, you know, are now very, you know, they're out in the media and very popularized. But I think everything relating to my PTSD was pointed out by somebody else, either a friend or a family member, only because the way I reacted to situations was very aggressive. In the military, especially in the infantry, when you're out on the street, you're taught to, you know, escalation of force, to escalate situations, you know, and that's how I would view my situation, my relationships while I was in the States as a civilian. So that's how it would go from 0 to 60, and my voice would be at what most would perceive a yell. So people would ask me, why are you getting so mad? And I'm like, I'm not mad. This is just how I talk. So I was completely oblivious to any of that. One of the things that I was dealing with, and still is an issue today, is being around groups of people, you know, which was obviously if you're going on a school campus, it's kind of hard not to be around groups of people. And I felt that I couldn't go anywhere with having my back exposed, you know, with people walking behind me that I didn't know. So I'd often, you know, turn around, check, as we say in the military, you know, checking my six, making sure that nothing shady was going on behind me. My self-medication was riding motorcycles. You know, it's pretty much a cliche, you know, Marine, fast motorcycle, whatever the case. So that's how I dealt with it. And, you know, I was dealing with it. I was going, you know, 120 down the street, on public street, and, you know, made a wrong move and went down pretty hard, probably at 80 miles an hour. And as I'm laying there on my back, I'm starting to realize, like, all these things that are going on. My aggressiveness toward others, you know, me yelling, me staying up at all hours of the night, you know, partying, just really dangerous behavior. I noticed that there might be something going on, but still at this point, I'm really ignorant to what it is. I just know that something's going on. I'm not like everybody else, and it's not just because I was in the military or whatever, but my experiences might have played a part in some way, shape, or form to how I'm acting now, which is becoming self-destructive. I was in school, and you know, I had a few situations there where there were a lot of ignorant students to what was going on out in the world. And the comment hadn't been made, Iraq and Afghanistan, I didn't even know that was going on anymore. And I just completely lost it and walked out of the class and, you know, didn't go back that semester. I'm 22 years old, you know, been through 3 combat deployments, seen friends go, had a lot of close calls myself, and now I'm here sitting in a classroom with people that don't really respect the teachers and are talking out of turn, and that kind of thing was just playing into my PTSD so much. It was making it hard to learn. So I hear about a vet center that's close to me, Gardena, California. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to go check it out. And while I'm there, I start talking to combat veterans and talking to other vets that I was working with, and start realizing that a lot of the symptoms that these people are dealing with, I'm dealing with as well. And I'm starting to learn a little bit more about what this PTSD thing is. And I started noticing that by working at the vet center, by being around these clinicians and speaking with other vets that have gotten help before, it was starting to help me. It really saved my life, because I really, at that point, you know, was probably at a really low time in my life, because, again, I didn't have that physical strength that I was used to in the Marines, and still dealing with this aggression that I didn't, this really unchecked aggression that I didn't really know where it was coming from. And dealing with the loss of my friends as well. So it was nice to be able to get in, speak with other combat veterans, and them reassuring me that, hey, you know what, there are others going through this as well. So it just, it was a really positive experience and encouraged me to continue to seek counseling. And after I started receiving counseling through the vet center, I was able to better recognize my triggers. Now, was I completely able to erase all the symptoms of PTSD? Absolutely not. But I didn't let them get to a 10. I was able to spot them at maybe a level 2 or 3. So I was able to understand, you know what, I better step aside, take a breather, walk away. Is this situation really worth it? Is it really worth arguing over, making a scene in you know, public setting? I don't have to escalate the situation as I did in the past. I can now accept it and move forward, knowing that it doesn't have any bearing on my life, and I can just continue on. When you're separating from the military, your mission is to transition as successfully and issue-free as possible. Your mission now is to take care of yourself, to perform that preventative maintenance, whether that be going to the VA medical center or going to the vet center, but just put the check in the box. You know, go get checked out. I lost 2 friends this year to suicides, and you know, it's probably the most heartbreaking thing, because you're right there, but your friends don't feel that they can reach out or they have somebody to reach out to. So it's important for not only veterans to reach out to other veterans, but if there is an issue, make it known. Confide in either another veteran that you know, or come out and seek professional counseling. I know myself, it's helped me. It's helped a lot of my friends that have been going through the same exact issues to be able to get out and seek counseling, speak to their friends. And if you're not comfortable speaking to a friend or family member, then come to the vet center or come to the VA.
That was pretty good stuff there, David. That young man, he checked all the boxes when it comes to PTS, as I've seen it in the years that I've been practicing veterans law. He hit on so many of the things that some of our guests who are veterans have said, and how he helped himself through helping other people. That was another thing that we heard countless times. And, you know, he also reiterated the point about, you know, going out and getting the help that you need. And don't be embarrassed by the fact that you finally have to admit that you suffer from PTS. I mean, you know, you didn't do that to yourself. You did that during the course of your, or that happened to you as during the course of your serving your country. So there's nothing to be embarrassed about, as that young man just said. And he's also seen his buddies who committed suicide, died in service. I mean, he's seen it all. And he's a very young man, but he's also a very wise man these days for what he's done to help himself. Over to you, David.
Yeah, it was amazing how Marco talked about how things would escalate in confrontations with people or in situations, and yet during the interview, he was very soft-spoken and calm and definitely under control, and it makes you realize a number of things, including, you know, trying to imagine the point he came from to the point that he is now. Imagine how traumatic it would be to be in a combat situation and have an explosion instantly kill your best friends right in front of you. And then years later, when you're home and you're trying to make that transition to civilian life, you have two more of your buddies that commit suicide. I mean, it's heartbreaking, and if anything, it's amazing that he's made the recovery that he has. But I'm sure it's a tough, sometimes day by day challenge. As he says, you know, you got to reach out, get help from other veterans. That's so important, because veterans, and Rick, I know you talk about this all the time, that veterans tend to only trust other veterans to confide in, because they believe, often correctly, that it's only other veterans that have been through the same experience. And not just any veteran, but combat veterans relating to combat veterans. Let's move on to our next...
David, one more point. You just mentioned combat veterans. You know, any veterans that are listening to this, and if you're considering your own situation and maybe you feel that you are suffering from PTS, and you kind of wonder, you know, how do I file a claim for it? If you're a combat veteran and you have all the appropriate medals, awards in your DD-214, the VA, you know, won't put you through a long, arduous process of making you tell your story about what happened while you're in service, which can be very, very difficult for a lot of veterans. And the fact that you are a combat veteran and it's documented in your file will automatically connect you, and the VA will, at that point, presume, if there's a doctor that says that you do have PTS, that, in fact, it occurred in service. So then it's just a matter of evaluating you to determine how far along, you know, what your rating should be, anywhere from the 0% non-compensatory up from 10 to 30 to 50 to 70, all the way up to 100%. So any combat veterans out there, you know, you should take note of that, because that's a big point. So a lot of veterans, they don't want to tell their story. They don't want to tell what happened in Iraq or Vietnam. And if you're a combat veteran, you don't necessarily have to tell that story. Back to you, David.
Okay, in our next tape, we're going to hear from a veteran who was physically injured while deployed. He went to the VA for health care, but like many veterans, he didn't want to admit to any of the other difficulties he was facing. However, fortunately, he discovered the VA's approach of treating him as a whole person, including his post-traumatic stress, that helped him to go on to a healthier and more fulfilled life. So, Doug, if you'll please roll the fourth tape.
My name is Leif, Army Infantry. I was stationed in Camp Virginia in Kuwait. I was a gunner doing convoy security from Kuwait all up and down Iraq. During an IED blast, the car, you know, swerved and we hit a big pothole, and just the compression of all the weight just smashed my spine. So I ended up with 3 compression fractures, the full tear in my ligament, and then kind of concussion syndrome. When I got home, I wasn't kept on orders. When I got home, I was just told, you know, wait for your terminal leave, which would be 2 weeks for me, and then just go to the VA, they'll treat you. When I first joined up, my wife was supportive. But then when I got back, and she knew I was going to deploy, things kind of got a little rough. And I believe she just didn't want to be alone. And then when I left, she was alone for, you know, a long time. And when I got home, I guess me being a little bit more angry, like just in that kind of enraged kind of, I just think arguments and things just didn't work out, and we ended up in a divorce. My first panic attack I had, I was actually still with my wife at the time, and we were walking in the shopping mall, and all of a sudden my neck just started like clenching, and I was like tripping, just going, whoa, what's going on? It was an overwhelming feeling that there was like a sniper pointing at me. I was crying, but, you know, trying to hold it in, be tough. And then all of a sudden my training took over. I don't really remember much, but I guess I grabbed her and we went like maybe a foot against the wall and just went out this back, you know, back way of the mall. I was really explosive coming home, getting in a lot of fights, getting really depressed where, you know, I wanting to end it a few times. I was always scanning, and because I was always the front gunner up in the front of the convoy. So always scanning on the freeway, and I'm driving 80 miles an hour because I want to get through the kill zone. I don't ever want to be driving slow. And my girlfriend drives. I mean, I'm constantly being the truck commander. Go, go, go. And I mean, she gets kind of annoyed sometimes, but luckily she's very patient. First 2 years, I drank every single day, morning to night. So I was self-medicating, trying to hide, you know, feelings and things like that. You know, I had the suicidal thoughts, and I just felt worthless, completely worthless. Like, you know, I'm not a good dad. Why, you know, my son's not living with me. Like, I'm not working. I'm, you know, just everything. And then, you know, the things I did over there. And so I decided to check into the psych ward at the VA. And that was a big help because I got to see a bunch of other guys and we were just all in the same boat. When I got into the VA, that's when my care really started taking place. And like a lot of guys were scared to, you know, go to the VA, or they just thought, you know, oh, I'm less of a man, or nothing's really wrong with me, I don't need to go. But me, I mean, I really did have the problems, but then when going through, you know, I learned the process. And it was real easy. You go to some warrior transition center, and they give you a caseworker, and then that caseworker books all your, you know, office visits. You don't really have to do much. You just call them, and they did everything for me. At first, I felt stupid, embarrassed. I didn't want to admit it to people that I was doing it. But once they start helping you and you're in the meetings and you have these, you know, Vietnam vets are helping everybody when you go in, and they give you tips and tricks and stuff on how to deal with it. But then they also tell you, you have to learn how to live with it.
Well, I'd like to thank Leigh for sharing his experiences. He's been through a lot. It's kind of eye-opening what he was describing about driving down the freeway at 80 miles an hour, like he was trying to get through the kill zone alive. And I'll tell you, it's been my theory in observing a lot of very aggressive and crazy and road rage type of drivers in my part of Florida, where there's just a lot of veterans, that there's got to be some connection, at least for some of them. And we've heard this anecdotally from other veterans, so interesting stuff. So, Rick, you want to introduce our last interview?
Yeah, another thing that I've seen with veterans is, you know, the going down the road thing. If they see, you know, now when they're in the United States driving down the road and they see bags in the road, garbage in the road, oftentimes they've said to me that when they see that, it triggers them because it reminds them of being in Iraq, Afghanistan, and that's where an IED might be. And, you know, that the feeling that they get when they see that, and some of them have even told me that they've stopped their car and turned around and went the other way.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, he mentioned something, too, about checking himself into a psych ward. You know, there's that thing again, a psych ward. Oh, my God, I'm crazy. No, sometimes you got to do different things to get the help you need. And in that case, that young man needed to check himself in the psych ward. And once he got there, he realized, hey, this is pretty harmless here. I'm meeting all these cool people who basically have the same issues that I do. So let's not get crazy about feeling like you're incompetent or you're going crazy. That's not the case. You just have a disorder that needs attention by other people. You're not the professional dealing with it. Eventually, you're going to know how to deal with it, and you'll be able to help other people deal with it. And while you're helping other people, you're going to be helping yourself. And that's the way that peer-to-peer group works. That's the way it works in AA. That's the way it works in NA. That's the way it works in recovery. So, veterans, go get recovered. In the final clip, we hear from a veteran who witnessed his friend's death while they were deployed together. When he finally came home, he was a different person. It seemed he had less in common with his new wife than either of them remembered. And he was often impatient with everyone and everything. Getting help at the VA was the first step toward reclaiming his life. Doug, please roll the final tape.
My name's Todd. I worked, I was in the Army National Guard for 11 years. I started in 98, got out in 2009. I was deployed in Bosnia and Kosovo in 2003 to 2004. And then I was deployed to Iraq from 2005 to 2007. I was on a patrol with another Humvee. It was just us, the R. Bradley and a Humvee. And we rolled past a checkpoint. We were in an area where there was some suspicious activity going on, so we went to check it out. And we happened to cross a checkpoint after that was over, and the Humvee behind me hit I think it was a 200-pound IED that was in propane tanks buried pretty deep in the ground. And there was five people in that vehicle. Two ended up dying. One guy was a double amputee. The other two guys had a couple scratches and some concussions. But that was probably about the time where everything started for me as far as like changing my life and my way of thinking and what I did things. Then I got home, and it was weird because the sort of the excitement of just being home and not having to worry about, you know, each day whether you're gonna still be around or not. So the actual excitement of being home, I think, overtook everything for about 8 months to almost a year. And then after that, you start trying to deal with the changes that have been there the whole time. You just didn't realize until then. It got to the point where my wife at the time and I, our values were different. We were never on the same page on anything. What was important to me before really wasn't that important to me anymore, and what was important to me wasn't really that important to her. She told me several times, she's like, you know, I kind of like the old you. And I said, well, that guy, he's long gone. The hardest thing is accepting that you're going to have to somehow adapt to that new guy. And a lot of times you don't want to, which is a lot of times you just resort to different things like anger. And yeah, it was pretty tough, bumpy road. I just felt different about her and about our life and about the thing. Like, I always knew I could still be a good dad, and I still am, but putting, you know, 110% into your kids and then putting 20% into your marriage, wow, that doesn't work out so well. So I guess I tried to just put it under, you know, not deal with it, just think to myself, it'll pass, you know. And but she'd continue to want to help in certain ways, and I didn't want it. And it got to the point where we basically just had nothing. It wasn't even a marriage. I was going through the divorce. We had separated out of the house. And, you know, kind of being there alone, just being by yourself and just realizing, you're like, it wasn't until just recently, like maybe back in February or March, that I wanted to go and get help and get some of the problem. I mean, that's 4 years of being back and saying, it's no problem. Yeah, it'll go away. Never does. It never goes away. to better the future for your family and like your kids and a future relationship, you have to find it within yourself to say it's time. I went to the vet center and I talked to a therapist there. Talking about stuff at the vet center was really, really helpful. She found certain things that I need to, and just you lay it all out on the table, and one by one you just kind of sort of set it down. You just put it down. You ask. You really dig inside yourself and say, it's going to be tough, but in order for me to get better, I need to drop some of this weight that you carry around. The road is not easy, but I tell you, the end result, like, I can see it. You know what I mean? I can see myself in a much better position in life. Like, once you start doing all that stuff, it's like you've already dropped all that stress and all that anxiety about it. Even the fact of just getting help, being anxious about just getting the help itself. As soon as you take that first step, it is a huge relief.
Well, Todd mentioned that first step, you know, in recovery, the first thing you have to do is you have to admit to yourself and to others that you've got a problem. And if it's PTS, if it's alcoholism or drug addiction, you've got to make that first step and say, yes, I have a problem. And from there, you can get better. And Todd obviously has done that. I commend the young man for doing that. And it is hard, very hard for young people to step up and have to make that admission to themselves and to others, because it's not a natural thing to have to do that. But as Todd said, you have to do it, and then you go, then you're on the road to recovery. Over to you, David.
Yeah, thanks, Rick. Well, I hope our listeners found these interviews of these veterans inspirational and insightful, and helping them perhaps understand veterans and encouraging them and veterans to reach out, take that first step, as Richard has said. Now, we've got just a few minutes left in our show tonight. A couple things I want to touch on real quick. I'll be real concise here. Last week on our show, we had Navy veteran Lauren Price, who's founder of a group called Veteran Warriors, talking about toxic contamination and illnesses caused by open-air burn pits in Iraq and Afghanistan. To follow up, I'd like to remind our audience about a documentary film, which is entitled Delay, Deny, Hope You Die, How America Poisoned Its Soldiers. The film is by director and producer Greg Lovett. It's available in DVD form. You can also screen it the Facebook search engine, Burn Pit Documentary. Type that in on Facebook, Burn Pit Documentary, and you'll come up with the page. If you're really enthusiastic about this issue and want to help, you can also host a screening of the film in your hometown on a local movie theater. Go to the website TUGG.com. That's TUGG.com. And under the Films tab on the website, look for the film Delay, Deny, Hope You Die, and you can find out more about how to host a screening. If you're interested, let me know, and because I've done the same thing about a year and a half ago. Okay, two things real quick, and then I'll turn it back over to Richard. We've talked about our StopWar.Today project. Our first film was released last week on our website. The website is StopWar.Today. It's a 24-minute overview film that talks about the cost of war, promoting peace building, promoting the work of the Cost of War Project at Brown University, and also A Mighty Case Against War by Kathy Beckwith. Again, you can view the film on our website, StopWar.Today. You can also find it on our Facebook page. Search for Stop War Today, and it's also on YouTube. Over to you, Rick.
Thank you, David. And before we close the show tonight, we'd like to provide our weekly reminder to veterans and their families about the important VA program called Coaching in the Care. And this, again, segues right great into the different stories that we heard tonight from various veterans about their struggle with post-traumatic stress. You know, coaching in the care helps veterans having difficulty transitioning to home life. Turning home can be a tough adjustment, and loved ones can help. Coaching in the Care offers free coaching to help you help your veterans. Call the program at 1-888-823-7458. The hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Again, the VA's Coaching in the Care number is 1-888-823-7458. In addition, I'd like to once again remind listeners that if you know a veteran who is suicidal or in a crisis of any kind, the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs also has the Veterans Crisis Line to help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Many veterans have committed suicide because they did not get the help they needed. Again, we heard from a veteran tonight who lost two buddies to suicide. Help them get the care they need to cope with their problem. Once again, the Veterans Crisis Line can help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. All right, David, back to you.
Well, it's time for us to go for this evening. We hope you'll tune in next week when our special guest will be retired Navy commander and now lawyer John Wells, who's the head of a veterans organization called Military Veterans Advocacy. He's been on our show a couple times before in the last couple years. He's a real expert on many veteran disability issues, and he's been a leader in lobbying Congress as well as education and litigation. He's going to talk about the so-called Blue Water Navy issue for Vietnam vets and Agent Orange. So tune in next week, same time, same station, and the time will be 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central, 5 p.m. Mountain, and 4 p.m. Pacific time here on BBS Radio Station 1. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Joyce and Joe Chivaroli and Corey and Hurley Law Group. So once again, thanks for tuning in this week, and I hope you'll tune in next week. Until then, have a great week. Good night.
Good night. Good night.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on PBSRadio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.